top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 342 of the Really Awful Movies podcast, Wrong Turn. That is, the 2021 Wrong Turn, not to be confused with the original from 2003, which I podcasted and which I highly recommend our listeners check out. It was done a few weeks ago, and I was on a bit of a wrong turn kick, as it were, and decided to head down this garden path here. What spurred this is twofold. First, the booking of a campsite that I did, and hopefully when Ontario, my jurisdiction, opens up, I'll be able to avail myself of that, because there's a strict and some would say a draconian lockdowns in effect, even as it pertains to being outdoors, which is pretty shocking and funny, but the great outdoors is calling. It's that time of year. Hopefully get another chance to have some great outdoor fun and adventure and maybe transcendent experiences too, because I had the opportunity to, on one trip in 5 hours north of Toronto in Killarney Provincial Park, canoe up to a moose. And it was an amazing experience. I've seen bears and foxes and heard wolf howls in the middle of the night, and it's just something absolutely incredible. And as a dyed-in-the-wool city dweller like myself, and Jeff even more so, it's find it important to get out and experience all that the outdoors have to offer and the transcendent experiences therein. The second part of this visitation was a YouTube rabbit hole. Those are always fun, right? Especially when you have more time from when your homestead is been repurposed to suit your home office needs. This rabbit hole involved something that's kind of fascinated me for a while, and it's the Appalachian Trail, aka the AT. And it, for our listeners in Europe, the Appalachian Trail is a rather lengthy hiking trail. I think it's mostly continuous, but then there are parts that where you have to venture out onto the road and maybe, get a ride. But it's a mostly continuous hiking trail that spans 3,300 kilometers. That's about 2,000 miles, more actually than 2,000 miles, and it starts at somewhere I think in the middle of Georgia and ends up near Canada, up in Maine, the home state of Mr. Stephen King. But it's something that I thought was really fascinating. There's even on YouTube, there's this guy who interviews through hikers, as they're known, and interviews them about why they are going on the sojourn, and ask them various questions about what their favorite trail food is and how they've gone about tackling this, kind of a treacherous trek in parts, because if you don't go in March or April, it's going to be too cold for all but the most hardened and seasoned outdoors people. So it spans multiple states, goes along the eastern seaboard of the United States, and has, by all accounts, just unbelievable views, particularly in Virginia and Vermont and Maine and that. So it just looks like an incredible thing, and I've almost wanted to put it on my bucket list if it weren't for the fact that traversing it takes all of, I think, at best, if you have no zero days, as they call them, which is days where you don't spend hiking for whatever reason, you can probably do it in 4 months. So this is a massive stretch of land. You're effectively walking the entire stretch of the United States from south to north. So why is this important? Well, wrong turn situates itself in this region, and that's become just such a favorite part of backpackers and through hikers, which is some in parlance of this camping community is people who actually go, instead of camping or taking on a portion of the trail, they go along its entire duration and try and commit themselves and steel themselves to be mentally committed to such a, I mean, really taxing and I would even argue heroic journey. Now, the folk horror genre is known for the, in its purest sense, for principles who tackle the transcendent and try and overcome an seemingly insurmountable obstacle or try and challenge themselves in some respect for some internal reason and get set upon by someone who or some group or thing or entity that is not of this time, whether that be the in the broadest sense, you could have the insider-outsider dynamic of Children of the Corn, but in the purest sense of the folk horror genre, you would have John Boorman's impeccable, just absolute whiz-bang, crackerjack film, and one of the best horror films of all time, if you indeed slotted into that camp, Deliverance. So Deliverance obviously has a bunch of middle-aged men seeking a transcendent experience. I guess you could call it a midlife crisis, and they put aside their personal lives, and they take to this gorge, which I believe is in Georgia. I do have the James Dickey novel on my shelf. I can't recall where he said it. And the various principals have their own demons to fight, and they really are trying to, I guess, it really is a metaphor for the aging process, because they're trying to, I guess, cling to whatever vitality they still have. And of course, Burt Reynolds is the buff alpha leader of that group. And, you know, and Ned Beatty really gets it. He gets the wrong end of it, it should be said. But that is really a metaphor for aging, which affects all of us, and kind of a battle against the elements in which a bunch of city folk, broadly speaking, these would probably be, I think, guys from the greater Atlanta area. So suburbanites venture out, weekend warriors venture out into the great outdoors and find it's not particularly great for them. Wrong Turn intrigued me for a few reasons. I'd just seen the first one, or revisited the first one. It'd been a while, and the first one follows the path of least resistance in the hicksploitation realm, in which the people have car trouble. Obviously, that's been the means by which you've gotten the narrative ball rolling for the likes of Tourist Trap and other movies of that ilk. But you have a car crash, and the principals have to find their way out of the woods, and they're set upon by just backwoods hillbillies. And this is pretty old standard trope, and it's something that can be maybe obliquely referenced in The Burning, where you have a character like that, but you have more on the camp counselor side of things, which is still people battling the elements, but they have far greater control over it than people do who are unwittingly put against the elements. Another thing, I should have mentioned my little triumvirate of impulses to spur watching this movie, but the excellent Les Stroud, who's a local guy up here in Ontario, whose moniker on TV and YouTube is Survivor Man, and his videos are just excellent. I believe it was a Discovery Channel production first, but he's had a little bit of a revitalization being on Joe Rogan and talking about how to survive. He's a pretty amazing guy, and I think he's brought his son out for different adventures. He basically puts himself out in the deep dark bush for about a week and survives on nothing but his wits and more often than not fish and bugs, but I digress. It's an amazing program, and it really tests what humans can overcome, which is really what underpins all of horror movies, regardless of the genre, is how people can overcome seemingly insurmountable obstacles. And I mean, Les Stroud does it in spades with Survivor Man. Now, with Wrong Turn, you have this setup where you have insider outsider group dynamics being really thrust to the forefront at the foot of the Appalachian Trail in some hick Georgia town, where the residents, as is par for the course, have a bunch of camo gear and shoot guns and spit and have are missing teeth and all that kind of thing, and they hang out at the Deer and Beer, a fine, not exactly fine dining establishment downtown that seems to be the only bar in town. And where everyone knows your name. That would be, you know, like Cletus the slack-jawed yokel from Simpsons and Simpsons parlance. But these guys have a really, really good, I guess, battle with a bunch of postgraduate, what they call hipsters, who descend on this bar as they ready themselves and steel themselves for the challenge that is hiking a portion of the Appalachian Trail. So they're not through hikers, and they are actually probably looked at as kind of soft pretenders by the tough redneck townsfolk, and they have a really good, I guess, tete-a-tete in the bar, where one of the members of the ranks of the postgrads takes umbrage with one of the rednecks calling what they do not real work, and defends their group, which includes some LGBT and people of color in that, but says, like, oh, these guys have real jobs. They run restaurants in New York City. One of them is, I believe, some sort of medical professional. I want to say it's an oncologist, but maybe not. And the other one is an engineer or architect or some such thing. So they dispute and take umbrage and take, take offense, frankly, to the fact that these, hillbillies with GEDs are just, pissing in their cereal and saying, this is not real work, with real work defined as being something probably you do with your hands or some sort of blue collar thing that that is deemed more manly and more worthy. So a great, great opening gambit, and you have a little playing with chronology involving the disappearance of one of the principals, and then their father, who tries to, I guess, make a hero of himself too by finding his missing daughter. So the heroic elements and the transcendent and the nature and such provide a really the standard template for the full core. And I'm by no means a Bear Grylls myself. Like, I've gone on camping trips and with portages I've been out in the wilderness for a week at a time, but you can't count on me to rub two sticks together and get some sort of fire going. I'm not like that. I really enjoy camping, but I know my limits. What I also know is that the packs these people are carrying for their sojourn are unbelievably ridiculous. And for some reason, this group of six has packed a six-man monstrous tent. So I'd love to know who was actually tasked and tagged to load this thing through, like a pack mule and just, wander through the woods with like 30, 40 pounds of gear on you, rather than individually taking two-man tents, because the people in question, the postgrads here, are a couple. So you have the LGBT couple, and you have one of the turns out to be missing girls later, and you have a black fellow. So it pits the it puts the racial contrast in stark contraindication right off the bat, as you would. I mean, you expect parts of rural Georgia to be like that, for better or for worse. I'm not sure if the stereotype holds. I've never been to Georgia, but I'm sure there's pockets of it. I can say for sure with Tennessee and Alabama that there certainly exists that kind of element. So when you have this kind of backdrop that is really incredible, and by the looks of it, they probably, I think, filmed it along that trail. You have the hallmarks and what draws hikers there the world over to the Appalachian Trail, or the OT, which is its crevices and crags and your ability to hike through rocks and these stunning vistas and outcrops that you can just take in, all these wonderful, wonderful and really incredible views. So, I mean, the director here really uses that. And it should say McElroy is, I believe, the name of the writer who also wrote the initial Wrong Turn. But this is a Wrong Turn that is completely different from the tropes that are really something that had been long established since the days of Toby Hooper's The Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 1974. So the original Wrong Turn really didn't deviate much from that. Whereas the 2021's version is an incredible departure. I don't mean that in a sense of lauding it, or it's It really takes elements almost from Predator. It takes elements from more traditional folk horrors rather than the kind of maniac hiding in the woods. And what they have, because there will be actually spoilers in this podcast, so if you don't want to hear them, tune out. But what you have is a group of mountain men who've since... themselves and their descendants have been setting up a community in the woods since the antebellum times. So since I think it was around the Civil War, it might have been after, I'm not certain of the dates, but certainly to the antebellum South. And you have this group, and they speak in strange Germanic cadences, and they wear fur, and they almost look like quasi-Vikings, and they're led by this Orson Welles burly figure. Ridiculous, but they've set up some sort of disparate, distant, detached community right in the middle of wherever this is. This might be Virginia, or it might be Georgia, I forget where it is exactly, but somewhere along the AT, and they have these underground tunnels, and they have the standard torches, and they come across these interlopers through what they call a murder, because one member of their ranks is beaten by one of the campers. So you put into this dynamic what could be in the hands of, I think, someone a little more capable on the directorial side of things, but you have what could be a discussion of moral relativism and whether there's absolute universal morality in the world. I would tend to side with yes, and if there isn't, maybe we should dismantle the UN right now. But I'd like to think that there are certain things that all of us can agree upon, whether that's you shouldn't harm a child, or whether I guess we can't all agree upon female genital mutilation or some such thing, but let's say Geneva Conventions for the treatment of POWs. There are definitely, without question, universal standards of behavior and how to treat your fellow man that I think probably hold up. But when one member of the ranks of this sequestered tribe gets killed, I mean, they put the campers on trial, and that's where things really take a turn. I mean, no pun intended, because what you have is the campers trying to save their own skin and save their own hides by integrating themselves into this pseudo-Viking community. And that's a pretty interesting conceit and a really neat idea. And this is something that probably is what helped garner this film so much critical approbation on Rotten Tomatoes, because this thing is at the 65 level, which speaks to, I think, it's a broad ambitions, because when you have these kind of questions that are being asked of your horror audience, it's something you don't often see. So plaudits all around for that. Kudos for engaging in this kind of thing. So you have almost this Kafkaesque trial of these principles, and they're being judged by this almost Henry VIII, larger-than-life, kingly-type figure wearing animal skins and in some cave somewhere. And it's just something that really upturns your expectations for this kind of movie. Now, that being said, there's a surfeit of silliness that really drags things to a halt. I mean, right off the bat, you have the campers attacked by a rolling log, of all things. It's like almost some sort of lumberjack contest in Canada or something, but this giant log is rendered in CG and is pushed off the side of some hillside and renders the six of them. I think it kills one of the members of the camping party, but it, instead of injuring them in different ways, this is a major film debit, but it gives them the same almost blunt force trauma to the face, and the same cuts and bruises, all of them. Like, what, the one log, even if it did hit them all, it would have surely maybe sprained one of their ankles, or at least bruised one of them rather than left them bloodied and bowed. But I just thought that was really bizarre, although it can be said, a neat way to have this forest dwellers, these creepy forest dwellers set themselves upon this group. So it does keep it ambiguous as to whether they were actually clearly antagonists, because as I said, they do put the campers on trial, and it's not clear whether this log roll was directed at them. It could have been just something that they were doing up on the mountain and they didn't see them, because it seems a rather strange and unconventional and inaccurate weapon to sic on somebody. So they do keep you guessing, and during the course of the trial, the members of the camping group almost have to concede that what they were doing, although they do stand up for themselves, but by saying it isn't murder, but ultimately they realize their fate and realize their fate rests in the hands of these of this off the beaten path tribe. So I mean, what an amazing idea here, and to the extent it works, I mean, you gotta just raise a glass of cheer to their ambition for this film, because I mean, this really takes things in a completely different direction. It's not something I've necessarily seen before. I mean, when you have the standard folk horror, you typically have unwitting campers drawn into this web, and they're typically just made either burned to death and on a stake, or they're eaten, or it's there's a lot of overlap with the cannibal genre too, but in that I think you could classify in a different way because of all the other genre conceits that the Italians gave us through Umberto Lenzi et al. But I think that with the likes of, let's say, The Ritual, it's a 2017 movie of a bunch of alpha male Brits who, you know, when one member of their party gets killed, they feel like they have to avenge him somehow by proving their mettle and proving their manhood by hiking through the woods, because they were, I believe, accosted by bandits in a shop, and they felt like that they didn't honor their manhood by fighting back sufficiently and letting their friend die. So they hike through the Norwegian woods. I almost want to sing the Beatles song, you know, I once had a girl, or should I say, she once had me. But yeah, they are set upon by a group of, I mean, like folk, you could say, who have their own pagan and primitive religious practices, and you usually realize that these people are not long for the earth once they encounter this group of people. So that's where Wrong Turn really turns things around. In the foreign horror space, I've had nothing but praise for the outstanding Turkish film called Baskin, and that's one in which a bunch of corrupt cops get their comeuppance in some caves in the rural Turkey, and that plays upon like a descent into hell. That similarly is what Wrong Turn plays with here, and they must face their deepest, darkest fears. So similarly, in that film, you have a bunch of zombie-esque figures that are in this out really in the woods. But if you haven't seen Baskin, it's really outstanding. But yet it's somewhat of a fringe example of this kind of folk horror. When it comes to what I've learned, I think the filmmakers could have been more effective by not pulling their punches. And speaking of the Italians, I mean, they certainly didn't. Specifically, Lucio Fulci, when it comes to eyeball trauma and gouging and that, whether it's the likes of the Beyond or any one of his films, really were known for ocular assaults. And this one, they actually have a cutaway when one member of the ranks is gets a pike dipped in fire and then shoved through their eyeball. But it's a cutaway, and there's really a lost opportunity to underscore the threats and the scares. Now, standard par for the course folk horror is the little girl, the cute little girl dressed in rags. It's almost become something of a cliche. You can draw a line all the way back to The Wicker Man, or more recently, Midsommar, which has that trope, and you have the cute girl, and the ambiguity is remains whether the girl will actually help the interlopers, or whether they're going to side with their family, and whether they have an impulse really to escape their clutches, or whether they're going to remain true, and whether blood ties hold. So putting this in the context of that, that's what you experience here. And you know, more deviations from tropes is that this particular family of cannibal inbreds, which again, the characters, much like in the first Wrong Turn, are self-aware of the fact that they're in hillbilly country, and in that they, you know, they make various disparaging remarks about the townsfolk down here, but you actually do have one member of their ranks drinking the Kool-Aid, or I guess you could say drinking the moonshine, because another spoiler here is that the black fellow, who's I believe an architect, he actually takes really well to his newfound home with these off the beaten path hillbillies, because it is some sort of depicted as some sort of weird socialist utopia in a way, because none of them is wanting for anything. They have a surfeit, a plenitude of, I believe that's the word, of game and vegetables and everything. They really are a self-sufficient community right in the middle of the woods, and they are actually racially mixed, and that was kind of an interesting departure from what you'd expect. Especially when you consider how the filmmaker set up the dynamic as being one that's loggerheads between the campers and the typical rednecks and the south of the Mason-Dixon line stereotypes. So it's the blackfellow joins their ranks and finds that he's accepted among them. So a really interesting thing I learned on that front. Another thing I've learned is that things are not as they seem. I mean, they really do throw a lot of tropes out the window here, and you really have to commend them. I mean, I feel almost a tinge of ingratitude, and you know, that I should be a little bit more generous in my, I think, 2.5-star review, but just because the execution is so silly in so many parts of things, and you have just behaviors that are just par for the course in horror, but unbelievably stupid. But for the there are pockets of this movie. Like, there really, this is a movie in two halves. It's your standard hillbilly exploitation, and then it's the more cerebral, more deeper, I mean, Kafkaesque trial and determinations of colonialism and cultural imperialism and value judgment that comes with that, but it doesn't really come together as anything that could be construed as cohesive. So I'm going to stick with my 2.5 for ambition. This one's 4, because my God, I didn't see this one coming. There are so many, twists and wrong or right. Right definitely turns, but there's just something about the way these characters behave that's a little bit off-putting. Performances are really off the charts. I got to give them that. And right off the bat, the bickering, something you see in the Canadian Deliverance to Circle of Square. That would be the 1976 movie Rituals, in which bickering doctors get airlifted into a remote Ontario camp and get set upon by like a Wendigo type creature from indigenous native Canadian mythology in that. But it really does have like enough going for it that it's almost worth a watch, but again, it's just executed with too many, I mean, particularly a really terrible, ridiculous twist toward the end that's worth shaving a point off itself. But all in all, let's say 2.75 for this one, and I am surprised still by the extent to which Wrong Turn resonates with people, because I really didn't find there to be too much going for the first one. It sure enough had its creepy moments, but I think when you deal with all like the rotting meat and the flies buzzing and the mason jars filled with things that are untoward, you can't really beat, hell, you could throw Rob Zombie's movies into that too, that kind of exploitation hillbilly aesthetic, but nothing really beats Texas Chainsaw Massacre, one of the most, I mean, indelible efforts from the 70s, like maybe in my top 3 horror movies from that time, let's say top 4, along with Jaws, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and those. But it really, I mean, that really set the boilerplate, and it's really the against which all other exploitation films are judged. Really, it's got to be TCM and Deliverance, depending on your. But really, Deliverance is more true to the folk horror roots of things, and I think Georgians are still trying to overcome depictions of that movie, and it's a really iconic banjo playing scene and everything. I really actually do recommend people check out the Dickey novel too, because it's really great, and you can really see just how dynamite Borman or whoever did the casting really got all these characters, with maybe, you know, a slight exception on one of them, but it really is so iconic, and it'd be an amazing film to revisit. It's that one really brings to bear the elements as a bigger challenge against the the heroic journey of the midlife crisis men, because that I think it does so more effectively than maybe any movie does, battling against the elements. It's just so good. Whereas I think something was lost, maybe with Wrong Turn, not really availing themselves enough of the incredible landscape that they found themselves a backdrop to or for. I mean, it seems to be a lost opportunity in a way, and they could have done a little more with a bit of the pacing and not have them captured so quickly, and maybe drawn out a bit of the suspense so you get a better sense of the lost in the woods kind of feel that would keep it more in the realm of the type of horror that I think I would prefer. But again, I mean, you got to give it some credit. You can't. And there is a gulf between the IMDb rankings and the critics, which is often the case, but there's certainly something to recommend Wrong Turn, although it really is a film in two parts that were slapped together that seem really disjointed, and it doesn't have anything that really has a very unifying feel. But, you know, again, there are some standout moments. You can't deny that. But whether I take to the Appalachian Trail or the AT remains to be seen. I was thinking it might be on my bucket list maybe when I'm near retirement. Who knows? When I saw some interviews on TV with a couple German fellows who were septuagenarians, I think, or maybe 60-something, who were doing the trail and think doing all of it. And there's a lot of mystique and surrounding approaching that trail, and I think a couple people have been murdered on it. And what adds to the dynamic that I think could have been incorporated into Wrong Turn is the fact that there are actually people who sleep out there too, let's say vagrants and just lunatics, who might be good red herring fodder if someone should follow up on this AT setup for a horror movie. So that'd be interesting to pursue as maybe a deviation or off the beaten path. But hopefully you've enjoyed this podcast. I'm going to continue to do seasonal, I guess, offerings in the horror space, and I really, really like the outdoorsy kind of horrors, the stuff like backcountry and that kind of thing. It's just really such good fodder. People being lost in the woods is really an amazing setup for a horror film. Anyway, don't forget to check out our book, Death by Umbrella, The 100 Weirdest Horror Movie Weapons. We've got a bunch of folk horrors in there, and we have Hicksploitation in there in spades. And we shall talk to you soon. Take care. Thank you.